Chapter 66 AMS Predator.
Excellent shooting, Mr. Creedy,
Grimm called out to the portside gun crews. The shots hadn't been difficult given the total surprise they'd attained on Mist Shark, but fully half of Calliope's web had been shot away, and at this point victory was only a matter of proper doctrine and intelligent manoeuvre.
Mr. Kettle, stabilize us, if you please.
Kettle nodded, already trimming the ship, bringing her level again after their dive into the mist to evade Mist Shark's hurried reply.
"'Bout there should do it, Skip,'
Kettle said. Grimm nodded and turned to the gun crews.
"'XO,' he called. "'Transfer the crews to the starboard battery.' "'You heard him, boys,'
Creedy called.
"'Secure your guns, unhook, and get to the other side.'
Predator's aeronauts leapt to obey, locking down the portside guns again and crossing the ship to the bank of weapons on the opposite side. Grimm clenched his jaw. Casualties among his crew had been severe. He had only enough crews to man one bank of guns. But there was no sense in letting Calliope know that. Should she work out that he could project force from only one side of Predator at a time, she could complicate matters enormously.
Captain,
called an aeronaut from the deck behind him and below. Grimm turned to find Mr. Eubanks, a stout, florid veteran with a bristling beard, waiting for him.
Report. We just fired the last of the signal rockets, Skip. Very good. You and your crew stand by for damage control.
Damage control, aye,
Eubanks said, and hurried back down the deck again.
She's banking, Skip,
Kettle noted, peering up at the red star still suspended in Predator's shroud. It had begun to track more sharply to the west. Calliope was hoping to open some distance between her ship and Predator, while Grimm was temporarily blinded by the mists.
"'Adjust course, Mr. Kettle,'
Grimm said. Kettle grunted and did so, as Predator manoeuvred to ascend from the mist beneath Mist Shark, this time on her other flank, and finish the job of laming her. Calliope had no way of knowing that Predator could see her.
"'Something wrong, Skip?'
Grimm shook his head once.
"'No, but it hardly seems fair, does it?' "'No, it does not, Skipper. It certainly does not.'
Kettle's face split into an evil grin.
"'Ain't it grand? Where can we get us one of those etherealists?'
"'Let us survive the day first and consider such matters later,' Grimm said. "'Once we're in position, we'll use the same approach as last time. "'But once we've fired, we'll accelerate our ascension to get above their guns' elevation instead of diving under them.'
"'That wasn't hardly a dive,'
Kettle pointed out.
"'We don't dare try any more than that,' Grimm said. "'Journeyman says the power runs are barely holding together as it is.' If we put the strain of a full dive on the ship, we could lose them entirely.
It would, Grimm thought, be a horrible surprise to find out mid-dive that your ship had suddenly lost the ability to stop diving.
Attack run and evasive ascension on your order, aye,
Kettle said. There was a sharp whistle. The pilot turned his head toward the starboard gunnery deck and nodded.
XO reports guns are ready to fire, Skip.
Very good, Grimm said.
Stand by. You think Mist Shark will surrender once we've lamed her?
Kettle asked.
She's got a good many fighting men on board.
A pulse of hot anger touched Grimm's chest.
They will surrender, Mr. Kettle,
he said crisply.
Or so help me God in heaven, I will scatter that ship across continents.
Kettle glanced aside at him, and Grimm saw the pilot shift his feet uneasily. Kettle lowered his voice, and his tone was cautious, concerned.
"'Don't get me wrong, Captain. After what Mist Shark did to that shipyard, I'm more ready than ever to blow her clean out of the aerosphere. But would you really do that?'
"'To Calliope,' Kettle's tone said, though he did not finish the sentence aloud. Grimm felt something twist and writhe inside him, a half-hysterical laugh that threatened to escape his lips. He hammered it down ruthlessly.
Only if she gives me no other choice.
He tried to offer Kettle a reassuring glance.
She is who she is. Do you really think she's become a loyal soldier to the cause of Spire Aurora? Kettle snorted.
Point. She'll yield, unless the Aurorans don't let her.
We are at war, Grimm said quietly. I will do what I must.
Grimm closed his eyes for a moment and took a slow breath, trying to get a sense of the ship around him. He gauged the wind, felt the slight tilt in her deck of the weight of half a crew overloading the starboard side. He felt the quivering hum of her core crystal, a barely perceptible buzz through the soles of his boots. It was, of course, a romantic fancy that he almost felt he could hear the same subtle hum of power coming from the capacitors of the cannon on the starboard gun deck. But nonetheless, his instincts confirmed what his intellect had already told him to be true. Predator was ready.
Sound maneuvers, Grimm called,
and the aeronaut manning the ship's bell began beating out the proper rhythm to warn the crew to secure themselves.
Stand by, gunners.
Gunners ready, Captain, Creedy called.
Grimm double-checked his safety lines and snugged them tight.
Mr. Kettle, he said. Commence attack.
Predator shot up through the misty mesosphere with the effortless grace of a cloud fin and the speed of a signal rocket. The acceleration in the ascension, driven by the enormous power of the new lift crystal, was at least as great as that the ship experienced in a dive. Grimm had to keep a firm grip on the railing of the bridge or risk being driven to his knees as the ship began to quiver and rattle, and then she began to sing. Grimm knew that he should be presenting a stoic, solid, unmoving example to his men, become a graven image of steadfast discipline and determination, but he simply could not remain still. He could feel Predator's grace, the light and easy way she moved through the air, could feel the fierce, proud joy that filled her as she rushed into battle, all of which was ridiculous on a purely rational level. Grimm knew that with his head. His heart knew better. As Predator's war song swept up in pitch and volume, a crewman erupted into a howling cry of his own. Grimm realized with something of a start that the scream was coming from his own throat. The bellow from the crew, a beat later, was the loudest Grimm had ever heard, despite their depleted numbers, and he could hear Creedy shouting with the rest of them. The grey mist abruptly lightened, turning paler grey, then pearly, then white, and a breath later, Predator exploded out of the mesosphere and into the wide blue sky. Mr. Kettle had timed his approach perfectly. They emerged from the cloud cover almost directly beneath the mist shark, travelling at almost exactly the same speed, only a few hundred yards out. In their first attack run, surprise had been on Predator's side. Now speed was everything.
Fire at will! Grimm shouted.
Fire! Fire! Fire!
Creedy cried, relaying the command to the gun crews. Predator's seven cannon fired almost simultaneously. Even though his men had instructions to fire only at the enemy's web, from their angle beneath the mist shark, there was no way to absolutely guarantee that the blasts would miss the ship itself, but his crews performed well. The ventral web burst into flame and began drooping and falling as multiple blasts struck it. A pair of stray shots went past the web and crashed against the mist shark's active shroud and were harmlessly absorbed as a sudden sphere of greenish light surrounded the airship. Grimm could all but feel the shock and dismay of the enemy crew. He did not blame them. For an airship to pursue a wounded foe with such perfect precision from within the misty veil of the mesosphere was a feat so improbable as to approach impossibility. But more vitally, he knew that even now the mist shark's gunners would be frantically depressing the snouts of their weapons to fire down at Predator the instant their pilot rocked the ship enough to give them a clean shot. Grim waited until he saw the enemy ship begin to roll to present her broadside to Predator, and then called,
"Ascend!"
Mr. Kettle threw the ship into her new maximum amount of climb, and Grim staggered and nearly fell despite his grip on the handrail. Predator sailed as swiftly and cleanly as a worthy soul winging to its eternal reward. 8 of the enemy cannon rent the air Predator had just departed with their fury, and the single blast that did manage to strike home brought forth only the incandescent green gleam of Predator's own protective shroud. Grim had timed their maneuver successfully. The Mist Shark's gunners tried to track Predator as she rose, but reached the limit of their elevation short of catching up to the lighter, faster ship. In order to track back onto Predator, the Mist Shark's pilot would have to rock the ship back up to level and onto her other side, all while being dragged forward, listing and pitching, by the uneven pull of a single quarter of her web. Shifting that much awkward mass against its own momentum and inertia would require crucial seconds. Seconds Grim had no intention of giving away.
"Fire!" he called.
Again, the gunners did their job. A single stray blast slipped through the web and flashed against the enemy's shroud. But the other half-dozen raked through the Mist Shark's last remaining length of web, tearing it from the ship and setting it ablaze. Mist Shark's acceleration immediately dropped to nothing, her drunken, wallowing form now gliding forward on nothing but waning momentum. Desperate signal rockets again flashed away from her, and Grim saw the enemy ship struggling to stabilize itself with its trim crystals alone. A tricky proposition without enough forward motion to allow the more responsive maneuvering planes to assist with the task, and until it was completed, the Mist Shark was virtually helpless against Predator's mobility. As long as Kettle could keep their ship out of the firing arcs of Mist Shark's cannon, Predator could pour fire down upon the enemy without reservation or fear of reply. And Mr. Kettle knew his business as well as any man alive. Kettle guided Predator into a high arc, rolling the ship onto her starboard side to present their broadside to the enemy, slowing just enough to give the gun crews the cleanest shot possible. Grim felt his stomach twist, and he tried to swallow through a dry throat. He was about to find out whether or not his duty would require him to murder Calliope and her crew. He flipped down the telescopic on his goggles and focused his attention intently on the Mist Shark.
"By the numbers," Grim shouted. "Fire!"
"Gun two!"
Creedy bellowed.
"Fire!"
The frontmost cannon of the starboard side of the ship howled, its blast smashing into Mist Shark's straining shroud.
"Gun four!" Creedy called. "Fire!"
The second starboard gun unleashed its fury, hammering down at the enemy's shroud, hungry for the vulnerable, unarmored airship beneath.
"Gun six! Fire!"
The Mist Shark's shroud's bright illumination grew dimmer, more translucent.
"Gun eight! Fire!"
The blast scorched the topmost mast of the enemy ship, and Grim saw what he had been looking for. A tall, lean figure, Calliope herself, he supposed, rushed to the aft dorsal mast and smacked a boarding axe down onto one of the lines running up it. The line parted, and the Mist Shark's Delosian colours, a white star upon a bisected red and blue field, went fluttering down toward the ship's deck in the aeronaut's universal signal of surrender.
"Cease fire!" Grim roared. "Cease fire!"
"Cease fire!"
Creedy echoed to the crews. And the reverberating thunderous howl of the last shot from the number 8 gun faded and vanished into the open blue. The Mist Shark lay quietly, meekly, beneath them, as Kettle brought Predator around, keeping the enemy covered with her starboard cannon. Grim let Creedy and Kettle handle the maneuvering, while he watched the enemy's gunners. They were, in proper form, retracting their cannon back into their secure position, where they would be unable to fire. It would appear that their surrender was genuine, though it was Calliope, after all. Grimm would proceed by the numbers, without dropping his guard. He felt a fierce smile stretch his lips.
"Mr. Creedy," he called, "fire up the launch, if you please. Signal to Captain Ransom my compliments. Surrender and prepare to be boarded."
The cheer that rose up from his aeronauts made the planking beneath Grimm's feet vibrate, and he fancied that Predator was voicing her triumph along with the men who crewed her. Within a quarter of an hour, Calliope crossed to Predator on her launch, its steam engine chugging the little craft steadily over from the Mist Shark. She had two crewmen with her to manage the launch, in addition to both of Master Ferris's missing wagons and a slender volume matching the one in Grimm's coat pocket, stolen from the great library. If Calliope had just been soundly defeated by a smaller, less heavily armed vessel, it did not show in her swagger or her confident expression. If she was intimidated by the dozen or so primed gauntlets being aimed at her, it could not be seen from the outside. She stepped up to the bow of the launch as it docked with Predator, with her usual smirk on her lips.
"Permission to come aboard, Francis."
Grimm reminded himself that she was calling him by that name only because she knew it annoyed him, and that he should not surrender to manipulation.
"Granted," he called calmly.
Calliope hopped down onto Predator's deck and peered around the ship curiously as she paced to the bridge and ascended the steps to it.
"Well, well, well," she said. "That was a bit of a surprise. What on earth have you been feeding her?"
"Enemies."
Calliope threw her head back and laughed.
"Book, please," Grimm said.
She tossed him the volume amiably, and he caught it.
"You've no idea the foul looks I collected when I went to get it."
"Did the Aurorans give you any trouble about striking your colours?"
"Nothing I couldn't handle," she said breezily. "I must admit, Francis, you do gorgeous work. That was excellently done, though you'd never have beaten me in a fair fight."
"I avoid them," Grimm replied. "And so do you."
Her teeth flashed very white, and she smiled.
"True."
Grimm nodded to Creedy, who sent several men to take charge of recovering the wagons from the Mist Shark's launch. They bustled the wagons away toward the Etherealist's cabin without delay. Calliope watched them go.
"That takes care of the preliminaries, I suppose," she said. "What do you intend to do with my crew?"
"I mean to return them, and you, to Spire Albion for arrest and trial," Grimm said. "The Aurorans will be taken prisoners of war and treated accordingly."
Calliope shook her head.
"You mean to have my crew tried as civilians for committing an act of war? They'll never submit to that. No Albion court would give them a fair trial, and they know it. They'll call them pirates and hang them."
"Possibly," Grimm said. "On the other hand, if you refuse to surrender, then by the Articles of War, I could blast your ship down to the surface here and now. Which alternative do you think they'd find more attractive?"
Calliope's face darkened, and she clenched her jaw a few times before answering.
"My crew are soldiers, fighting as soldiers. They will be tried and judged as soldiers in a time of war."
"Or what?" Grimm asked mildly.
Calliope stared at him, her mouth working on words that never quite formed, her eyes all but glowing with the heat of her anger. Then she closed her eyes and muttered a savage curse beneath her breath.
"Or what?" Grimm asked again, in exactly the same tone.
"You've made your point," she said in a bitter tone. "You've made your point, you bastard. I am in no position to make demands of you."
"No, Captain Ransom. You certainly are not," Grimm said.
Calliope made a face as though she had just bitten into a piece of rotten vat meat.
"I request that my crew be taken as prisoners of war and held as such, Captain Grimm. Please."
Grimm nodded slowly several times.
"I want you to know something."
She frowned and peered at him. I know that you didn't have to use the firing pattern you did at the landing shipyard. He said, you could have targeted Predator first instead of last.
Yes, she said simply.
I also want you to know that I realize why you offered me that contract the last time you came aboard. You didn't want me to be present for what was going to happen. You wanted Predator out of harm's way. Her head moved in what may have been the barest fraction of a nod. Why? Grimm asked. Calliope looked away. The question hung heavy in the silence. After a moment she said,
Once she was my home too.
Grimm's stomach stabbed with a little ache of echoed pain he thought he'd left behind him. I remember, he said quietly. Captain Ransom, I hereby declare your crew, your passengers, and yourself, prisoners under the Articles of War. Mr. Creedy, make a note to that effect in the ship's log.
Aye, Captain,
Creedy said firmly. Calliope closed her eyes for a moment and then nodded once to him. Her lips began to shape words several times, but evidently she could not force herself to actually say them. Grimm had his victory. There was no point in rubbing it in any further. Your thanks are not necessary, Captain Ransom. I will be sending engineers back with you to board the Mist Shark and disable your cannon, and you will sail with Predator back to Spire Albion. You will be under my guns the entire way. If you deviate from any order I give, no matter how slightly, I will open fire. Do you understand?
I'm not an idiot, Francis.
Grimm fought against annoyance, but felt a muscle at the corner of his mouth twitch despite his best efforts. Calliope saw it too, and her smirk settled back into place upon her lips. I suppose not, Grimm said. All the same, Calliope, the past several days have been an almighty trial. Do not test me.
Contact!
Shouted one of the lookouts in Predator's dorsal mast.
Captain, contact!
Grimm's head snapped around toward the lookout. Where?
Inbound vessel high. West by southwest, coming fast.
An airship coming from the west. But the fleet was operating exclusively east of their current position. Grimm's stomach clenched and he felt his knees go a little loose and unsteady. He turned, flipping down his telescopic again, and spotted the incoming airship at once, heading for them at breakneck speed. He studied her through the telescopic carefully and tried to ignore the way his heart had begun beating faster and his hands had begun shaking. Calliope, he said quietly, you don't need to be here. Get in your launch and go. Now. He heard her draw in a small, sharp breath of her own as she saw the approaching ship.
I don't suppose I could convince you to surrender.
Grimm gave her a look over his shoulder. Her smirk turned bitter.
Ah, no, of course not. Duty.
She shook her head and with a few easy strides was off the bridge and heading back to her launch. Sound general quarters, if you please, Mr. Creedy. Come about. Extend the web around the clock and get us moving. The XO boomed out the orders, and once again the ship's bell began to ring. Men scrambled for their posts, quickly re-cinching their safety harnesses. Aeronauts swarmed into the masts, playing out the expansive lengths of the ship's web and getting Predator underway. Grimm stood motionless on the bridge, watching the menacing shape of AAV Itasca growing larger with unnerving rapidity, and wondered whether it was already too late to escape.